the NBC Theater, a full-hour dramatization of Booth Tarkington's classic of boyhood, Penrod. Herewith, the first broadcast of our autumn season. An exciting season, we think, including, as it does, works by such distinguished authors as Ernest Hemingway, Henry James, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Edith Wharton, Theodore Dreiser, William Faulkner, and Thomas Wolfe. Today, on our inaugural broadcast, we bring you a lighthearted dramatization by Robert Gray, based on the book Penrod by Booth Tarkington, surely one of the most enjoyed American writers of the past three decades. At intermission, you will hear a recorded commentary on the writings of Mr. Tarkington by the noted critic, J. Donald Adams. Here, then, is Penrod.
Perhaps you read Penrod for the first time as long ago as I did. The copy I have is a little the worse for wear. Its pages are brittle and brown at the edges, and it has the musty smell of all old books. And on the flyleaf is the inscription, "To Bill, on his 13th birthday, from Mother and Dad, July 20th, 1915. Times have changed since Penrod's day, but thank goodness boys haven't. And whether you read it 35 years ago or yesterday, I know you'll agree that Tarkington had the rare gift of understanding boys, and that his Penrod was and is the prototype of all boys of every generation. Suppose we begin on, let me see. Oh, here's a good one. Chapter 7, The Evils of Drink. Now, there's a chapter I still remember very well. When Penrod acquired a dime by a simple and antique process, which was without doubt practiced by the boys of Babylon.
Sunday school?
Where else?
What do you mean, where else?
It's a dumb question.
All I said was, are you going to Sunday school? What's so dumb about that?
It's Sunday, ain't it?
Of course it's Sunday.
And right there's the church, ain't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to go every Sunday, don't I?
Well, seems like.
And I got on my Sunday clothes, ain't I?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, so it's a dumb question.
Okay, you don't have to be so smart. Where are you going after Sunday school?
After? That's another dumb question. Home, what do you think? You want to come over?
Uh-oh, not me. I'm going to the picture show.
Picture show?
There's a swell picture playing at the Mystic. It's titled The Drunkard's Downfall. It's all about a man that falls into evil ways with some wicked traveling salesman. Then things go from bad to worse. He ends up beating his poor wife and baby and turning him out in the cold to starve. Boy, it's swell. So why don't you come, too?
Me?
Uh-huh.
I guess not. Besides, how much money you got, Sam?
20 cents.
20 cents? All to spend at the show?
Well, no. A dime's for Sunday school. But the other 10 cents is mine. How much have you got?
A dime.
Well, just Sunday school money, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, this truck was nice till he took the drink and painted women. Then he gets so mean that his wife and baby run off to a relative, an aunt or something. And Keeney keeps on sleeping right on lower, and the first thing you know, he's got to be locked up in the madhouse. Too bad you can't go, Penrod.
Well, now, Sam, old friend, if you really want
to... But Julie said you got Sunday school money.
The show's only a nickel, Sam, old boy.
Hey, now, wait, Mother Nickel's for popcorn.
Popcorn? Would you rather have a stack of old popcorn than my company?
Well...
Well, what?
Well, yes.
Ha ha ha! So that's the kind of a friend you are.
Well, you ain't mad at me, are you, Penrod?
Mad? Heck no. I wouldn't go see that old picture even for $1,000,000.
Basil Hearthstone and the Drunkard's Downfall. Two tickets, please.
Thank you.
He sold his soul to Demon Rum.
How many, please?
One. Half fare, please.
Thank you. Pass on in, please.
Hot buttered popcorn. Get your hot buttered popcorn.
I'll have one sack.
There you are, Sonny. 5 cents. Yeah.
Oh, oh, pardon me. Excuse me.
Of all the nerve. Right in my lap.
Hey, Sam. Where are you, Sam?
Here, over here.
Ow, my cord.
Oh, golly, excuse me.
Here. What's going on here?
I'm just trying to find a seat, that's all.
Well, be quiet about it. You're disturbing the other patrons.
Yes, sir.
Here's a seat, Penrod.
I'm coming. Excuse me, Kate.
I hear you.
Hi. Boy, this is a swell picture. He must have a giddy. Just look at him staggering. He's awful drunk.
Who are those people?
That's his wife and little baby girl. He beats him something awful.
All right.
Hey, how'd you get in? Where'd you get the money?
What? I just happened to find it.
Find it? Where?
In my pocket.
Hey, you got popcorn, too.
Oh, I know. Didn't put you down the collection plate at Sunday school.
All right.
I remember now seeing you looking through your pockets like you lost it.
Well, I did lose it. You said yourself you saw me looking.
Will you two kids come out of that talking?
Yes, sir. Must have found it again awful quick.
Well, it was hiding in the corner of my pocket. Gee whiz, can I help it if that dime didn't want to go to China? Maybe it likes things right here in the old United States. Boy, well, I bet one thing. I bet I'm never going to be a drunkard. You know something, Sam? Maybe we oughtn't to stay to see the picture the second time.
Why? You afraid you'll catch it when you get home?
Well, how about you? I guess if I catch it, you'll catch it, too.
Not me. My folks are going visiting this afternoon.
Oh, gee.
What will you tell them, Penrod? After all, you use your Sunday school money, and that makes it worse.
Well, let me think.
It better be good.
Stop interrupting my thinking. Let's see. I could tell them that... that ain't so good. I know, Sam. I'll tell them I was coming along the street by a little old house, and a lady put her head out the window and said her husband was drunk and whipping her and her little girl. And she
took him a picture, huh?
Yeah, and she asked me wouldn't I come in and help hold it. So I went in and tried to get hold of this drunken lady's husband.
Hey, that sounds swell, but... Oh, look, there's a buggy pulled up in front of your house.
Golly.
How will a little girl getting out?
Hey, that's Aunt Clara and Cousin Clara. Mom didn't see nothing about them coming.
Who's Aunt Clara and Cousin Clara?
They're just Aunt Clara and Cousin Clara. Aunt Clara's married to Uncle John, and they live in Dayton, Illinois.
Dayton?
I wonder where Uncle John is. Sam, golly, you don't suppose...
Taking the picture? Boy, I bet that's it. She looks awful worried and excited. Does your mother run out of the house? Anyways, now's your chance to sneak in. Maybe they won't notice how late you are.
Oh, rats. Wouldn't you know something would happen just when I had a swell story?
Go right on in, Clara. It's so good to see you, dear. And such a surprise. I had no idea you were coming.
Oh, dear, I know I should have wired you, Ella, but I was so worried.
Worried?
Oh, it's the measles epidemic in Dayton. It's really frightful. And little Clara's been so fragile. John insisted that we come immediately. He said we couldn't afford to take a chance.
Well, I'm glad you did come. You know how welcome you always are, Clara, dear. Oh, and little Clara. She's just a little doll. Come along. I'll help you settle in the spare room. Oh, here's Margaret.
Hello, Aunt Clara.
Oh, Margaret. My, what a lovely young lady you're getting to be.
Oh, this is certainly a nice surprise. Oh, little Clara, isn't she sweet?
We came because of the measles epidemic, Margaret. It's
yes,
really...
I heard you tell Mother.
Come along, Clara. We can talk later. Dinner's almost ready, and I know you'll want to freshen up first. I wonder where Penrod is. See if you can find him, Margaret.
Oh, all right.
Oh, now don't take that attitude, dear. After all, he's your brother.
Well, you can't blame me for that.
Fine way to talk.
Well, where do you come from?
I've simply been washing my hands out in the kitchen, is all. When did Mama find out Aunt Clara and Cousin Carter was coming?
Oh, guess not until she saw him drive up.
How long are they going to stay?
I don't know.
Uncle John will let her stay quietly, Moody.
What do you mean? He sent him here. Why shouldn't he let him stay quietly?
Then he hasn't taken a drink?
To drink? Certainly not. Where on earth did you get that idea?
Why did Aunt Clara look so worried?
Good gracious. Don't people worry about anything except somebody's drinking?
Well, you don't know it ain't that.
Oh, poor Uncle John. And his whole lifelong regret is that he didn't enter the ministry. Why, he won't even allow grape juice or ginger ale in his house. Where in the name of common sense did you get an idea like, oh, Fenrod? Good heavens.
Oh, rats. Fine family we got. Nothing interesting ever happens.
The next morning, when Penrod had once more resumed the burden of education, it seemed infinitely duller. In arithmetic class, he sat staring at an open page of a textbook, but not studying, not even reading, not even thinking. He was merely a state of being.
5 8 plus 8 16 plus... Penrod?
Yes, sir?
Now, all of you children, not at the board, please pay attention. You're to find the lowest common denominator and the highest common factor.
For a moment, Penrod focused his attention on the blackboard. But the battle was quickly lost. The routine of the lesson reached his ears in familiar, meaningless sounds, but he heard nothing. And yet this time, he was profoundly occupied. He had drifted away from the painful land of facts and floated in a new sea of fancy. He had discovered the delightful secret of self-levitation. In his mind, he extended his arms gracefully and delicately paddled the air with his hands. The result was electrifying, for Penrod suddenly found himself elevated gently toward the ceiling. Penrod swooped down and took the drum major's baton, and then soaring to a level with the treetops, he beat time for the band and the vast crowd. Marjorie Jones was weeping in admiration and throwing him kisses to prove she loved him. It was a great moment, except for Miss Spence, who kept jumping between him and Marjorie and calling his name.
Penrod? Penrod Schofield?
Penrod grew more and more irritated with her. It seemed that she had screamed his name 1,000 times.
Penrod! Penrod, answer me! Penrod Schofield.
Oh, for goodness sake, can't you keep still a minute?
Quiet, children. Penrod Schofield, stand up.
Yes,
Now, what excuse do you have for speaking to me in that way?
Well,
come on, speak out.
I was just thinking.
Thinking what?
Just thinking.
Now, that will do, that will do. All right, now, children, you may go for lunch.
Oh, boy.
All except Penrod.
Oh, no, what do I
do? I'll deal with you in a moment, young man.
Boy, you'll get it. I guess you'll be sorry.
All right, go chase him, sir.
Move along, children. Don't dawdle now. Don't dawdle. Very well, Penrod. What excuse have you to offer before I report your case to the principal?
Did you say principal?
I did.
Yes,
I want an answer.
Well, I was just thinking.
Thinking what?
I don't know.
Well, now that won't do.
Yes, sir.
Well, if that's all you have to say, come along.
Oh, no, gee whiz. I mean, well, then I have got an excuse.
Well, what is it?
I guess anybody that had been through what I had to go through last night would think they had an excuse.
Well, what has last night to do with your insolence to me today?
Well, I guess you'd see if you knew what I know.
Now, Penrod, you must either tell me what was the matter with you, or I'll have to take you to Mrs. Houston.
Well, it's because I didn't sleep last night.
Or you will?
No, it was lots worse than being sick. It was awful.
What was?
It was about my Aunt Clara.
Do you mean your mother's sister who married Mr. Ferry of Dayton, Illinois?
Yes, sir. Uncle John. Trouble was about him.
I used to know your Aunt Clara very well, and I've always heard her married life was entirely happy.
Yes, it was. Until last year when Uncle John took to running around with traveling men.
Penrod, what are you saying?
Yes, sir. Well, that was what started it. At first, he was a good, kind husband. But these traveling men are coaxing into a saloon on his way home from work. And they got him drinking beer, and then ales, and wines, and whiskey, and cigars.
Oh, poor Aunt Clara.
Aunt Clara and her little baby daughter had to come over to our house last night. Baby Clara was so bruised up where he'd been hitting her with his cane.
Oh, you mean your uncle had done such a thing?
Yes'm. And Mama and Margaret had to sit up all night nursing little Clara.
Oh.
And Aunt Clara was in such a state, somebody had to keep talking to her. There wasn't anybody but me to do it, so I...
Well, where was your father?
Ma'am? Oh, Papa. Well, he was down at the train waiting to see if Uncle John tried to follow him. So I had to sit up with Aunt Clara. She had some pretty big bruises, too.
But why didn't they send for a doctor?
Oh, they didn't want any doctor. They didn't want anybody to hear about it, because Uncle John might reform, and then where'd he be if everybody knew he'd been a drunkard and whipped his wife and baby daughter?
Oh, Penrod, this is terrible.
Yes, and it's kind of bad, all right. Especially when he started running around with painted ladies that wasn't his wife.
Oh, dear, poor Clara.
So I sat up all night talking and putting hot towels on her bruises. And I kept saying, "Now, Aunt Clara, there's no use taking on so about it. All the quiet in the world can't make things any better."
Oh.
And then she'd just catch hold of me and sob and kind of holler. And I'd say, "Don't cry, Aunt Clara. Please don't cry."
Oh, you poor boy. I know now. You were so worn out, you just didn't realize what you were saying to me.
Yes, sir. Well, I guess I was thinking how to save Uncle John.
Oh, Penrod. You dear, dear boy.
You have more of the roast, Clara.
Thank you, Ella. I've had plenty.
Sit up, Penrod.
Yes, sir.
The oddest thing happened this afternoon, Ella. Do you ever see Mary Spence nowadays?
Penrod?
I'm sorry, Papa.
It was the water, Henry. It must have gone down the wrong way.
Nonsense. If he can't control himself, he can leave the table.
Yes, sir.
I see Mary occasionally, Clara. She's Penrod's teacher now.
Is she? Do people think we're a little queer these days?
Why, no. What makes you say that?
Yes, Aunt Clara, why?
Well, she certainly acquired a very odd manner. I met her at the corner as I came back from my walk just before dinner. And all the time we talked, she held my hand and looked as though she was going to cry. She seemed to be trying to say something and choking.
She did? This does sound strange, doesn't it?
She stood there struggling to get her voice. Really got very embarrassing. And then finally she said in a sort of a tearful whisper, "Be of good cheer. This trial will pass."
Penrod, what on earth's the matter?
May I leave the table, Papa?
You not only may, you will. Immediately.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
But Henry...
There's no excuse for that thing. It will teach him a lesson.
How queer of Miss Beth to say a thing like that.
But Margaret, wait. After she said that, she said something even queerer. And then she put her handkerchief to her eyes and hurried away.
What was it she said?
She said, "I know Penrod is a great, great comfort to you."
Henry.
I'm sorry, am I?
Is that all she said, Clara?
Every word.
How weird.
Well, if you ask me, I'd say she's a goner.
Thank you.
one seems to be at home.
Hi, Papa.
Penrod, where are you? Oh, what are you doing under the piano with that dog?
Me?
Naturally, you.
Well, I was just kind of sitting here with Duke and thinking.
Where's your mother?
Nobody was here when I got home from school.
I suppose she and Clara went shopping. Well, I might as well have a look at the paper.
Papa, have you ever seen Duke beg? Come here, Duke, little boy. Now sit up and beg for Papa. Good old Duke. Come on now. Sit up and beg. Did you see him, Papa?
Very good, very good.
He does it all the time now, Duke does. Whenever he wants anything, he just sits up and begs.
Well.
Would you like to see him do anything else?
Henry, are you home?
In here, Ella.
Henry Paslow Schofield. I don't know what is to be done with that boy. I just don't know.
Penrod?
Who else could I mean? Henry, you've got to take this matter in your hands. It's beyond me.
Well, what's the trouble, Ella? Sit down. You look upset.
Upset? I'm at my wit's end.
What happened?
Last night, I got to thinking about what Clara told us at dinner.
What are you talking about?
You know what Clara said about Mary Spence last night.
You mean about Penrod being a comfort?
Yes. And I kept thinking and thinking and thinking about it till I just couldn't stand it.
But what did he do?
Oh, it must be kept from Clara. I'll never hold my head up again if John Ferry ever hears of it.
Confound it if John Ferry hears of what?
Well, I thought if Mary Spence had become a little unbalanced, it was my duty to know it as Penrod's mother. So I decided to call on her at her apartment after school and have a little chat and see. And I did. And, oh.
By George, I...
Now what?
Well, that's funny. Penrod was there under the piano a moment ago. He must have... go on.
Well, I've just come from Mary Spence, and... Oh, I've never known anything like this. Henry, whatever you do... Do you hear me, Henry? Listen to me and stop looking out the window.
I'm listening. I was just looking out there at Duke. Duke's a very clever dog, Ella.
But, Henry, I'm...
When Duke wants anything from Penrod, he's learning to sit up and beg. Look at him out there now at the stable door. He's sitting up, begging to get inside.
Henry, this is serious. You've got to find Penrod. And whatever you do to him, it must be done in some place where Clara won't hear it.
I think I can find Penrod when we want him. I think I know just the place to do it in. go on with your story, Ella.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a radio version of Penrod by Booth Tarkington. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentator, the noted literary critic and author of the Speaking of Books column in the New York Times, Mr. J. Donald Adams. Mr. Adams speaks from New York.
The two most famous boys in American fiction are, of course, Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. They are the immortals, and probably they'll always have first place in our minds and hearts. It is a long time after them before another American writer wrote about boyhood truly enough and universally enough to arouse a great popular response. There was, to be sure, Peck's Bad Boy, but you've got to be pretty well along in years to remember him. And he's become not much more than a name in the reference books. Then there was little Lord Fauntleroy, but he had only a passing vogue. It wasn't until 1914, nearly 40 years after Mark Twain published The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, that another boy in a book captured and held us. He was Booth Tarkington's Penrod. We liked him for several reasons. Most of all, I suspect, because he was always in trouble and very ingenious in squirming his way out of it. No boy without a marked talent for mischief could make much appeal to the American imagination, and Penrod had what it takes. There was one great difference, though, between Mark Twain's Tom and Tarkington's Penrod. Mark Twain wrote about Tom from the inside out. He was reliving his own boyhood, and from his own point of view. Tarkington, on the other hand, is the grown-up watching the young fry with kindly amusement. He used the same approach later when he wrote about teenagers in 17. And it's this difference, I suppose, that guarantees a longer lease of life for Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. Nevertheless, Penrod is a real boy, a person in his own right, living in his own world, as all children do, the fact which we sometimes forget. If Tarkington doesn't really re-enter that world as Mark Twain did, he shows it to us with a humorous detachment. And Penrod will probably have a longer life than any other of Booth Tarkington's creations, except for Alice Adams. That was the book in which he drew closest to life.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Our dramatization continues from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
If any grown man has so completely forgotten his boyhood as not to remember the discomforts, the indignities of the barber shop, he need but accompany his own young son on the next trip to the barber. Tonsorial processes are not unagreeable to manhood. In truth, they are soothing. But the hairs attached from a boy's head get into his eyes, his ears, his mouth, and down his neck, and he does everywhere itch excruciatingly. Wherefore he blinks, winks, weeps, twitches, contorts his countenance, and squirms. And should the barber's scissors clip more than intended, like an outlying flange of ear, the reaction is immediate.
Ow, my ear!
There ain't any call, said Yellen. I didn't hurt you.
Oh, no, you just chopped on my whole ear, that's all.
Never did any such thing. But I might have nicked you a little. Here, I'll put some alum on it. Turn, if you ain't a yellin' this kid, you will get it if you don't set still. Turn your head just a little. No, that way. I just want to touch up this side here.
Darn hips, it's getting in my mouth.
You ought to see how still that Georgie Bassett sits. I hear everybody says he's the best boy in town.
The best boy in the town? Who cares? Oh, Seth Rose!
I haven't heard nobody around the neighborhood making no such remarks about nobody named Penrod Schofield.
Well, who asked them to? Ow!
I hear they call Georgie Bassett the little gentleman.
Yeah, they better not call me that. I'd like to hear him just once, that's all. Just once. I bet. Ow! Hey!
Why? What would you do?
Well, it's all right what I'd do. I bet they wouldn't want to call me it again very soon.
Now, little Robin, huh? What would you do if it was a little girl? You wouldn't hit her, would you?
Well, ow! Hey, cut that out, rubbing so hard.
So you'd go and punch a poor, weak little girl, would you?
Who said I'd hit her? Well, I bet I'd fix her, though, all right. She'd see.
Now, I'll just finish off a little tonic. I want to hear what you'd do if a young lady ever walked up and called you a little gentleman. I want to hear what you'd do to her.
I'd do enough, I said. Don't you worry about that.
And if it was a boy, what would you do then?
You'd be lucky if he got home alive, that's all.
Well, it smells good, don't it?
Oh, gee whiz, when are you going to be through?
As soon as we comb it now. What would it make you so mad for her to have somebody call you a little gentleman? Why, it's kind of a compliment, you might say. What would you want to hit anybody for that for? Guess that does it. You can get out.
You just let them try it. Here's your money. Just let them try it, that's all I say. They find out quick what had happened. And believe me, it'd be plenty.
That boy sure case. Little gentleman. Reckon I kind of got his goat. He didn't seem to like it a bit. Darn pesky flies drive a man crazy. Worst ever seen this time of year.
Hello.
Well, if it ain't little Miss Marjorie Jones and Mitchy Mitch. You come down to have your hair cut, Mitchy Mitch?
I want a haircut. Now,
Mitchy Mitch. Mama says not to cut it too close.
All right, Marjorie. Now, come on here, Mitchy Mitch. Let's get up in the chair.
Oh,
now,
Mitchy Mitch, Mitch, don't be cross. Little brother mustn't be cross, and Mr. Perkins won't know what to think of
him. That's all right, Mitchy Mitch. I reckon you couldn't behave no worse than Mr. Penrod Schofield.
Penrod?
I just finished cutting Penrod's hair, and he don't want nobody to call him a little gentleman.
Oh.
No, sir. I says to him, they call Georgie Bassett little gentleman, I hear. And he says, they better not call me that.
Well, I never.
Sir, that's what he says. Nobody better call me a little gentleman. Nobody.
Little gentleman, huh? Take that! Yeah, now I'll show you who can go call our little gentleman. Think you can make... Hey, Sam!
Hey, Penrod! They've been getting a haircut, huh?
Uh-huh. What's that stuff, Sam? What you think? A whole big barrel of tar, that's what. Tar? Golly, where'd it come from?
I don't know. Some men who was ripping her in the alley left it, I guess.
Say, that's some tar. How's it taste?
Not so good. It's too thin to chew. It's awful sticky.
Yeah, it is, ain't it? What you gonna do with it?
Well, the barrel's only about half full. Be a lot better if it was four, so you didn't have to reach down there so far.
Hey, I know. We could fill it up with sticks and stuff. I'd soon make her run over, and then we'd have something. You gather them up, Sam. I'll stir them in.
No, you don't. I'll swirl them in. Hey, whose tar is this anyway?
Well, it's not yours.
Oh, I guess I found it.
In the back of my house, ain't it? Oh, I guess we could take turns. Hey, I got a better idea. Look at that big old rock there. Boy, I bet it'd run her over quick.
You think we can lift it?
We can try. Come on.
Boys, it's heavy.
Way ahead. We better slide it in there easier. It'll make an awful splash. Hey, look who's coming.
Marjorie Jones.
Marjorie?
Uh-huh. Mitchy Mitch. Hey, don't let go.
I ain't. It just slipped a little. Raise it up on the rim of the barrel. Hey, that's got it. Now all we gotta do is ease it down here. Hello, little gentleman.
Who said that?
I did. Now listen here, Marjorie.
My goodness, what a way for a little gentleman to talk.
Cut that out.
Don't you talk that way to me.
Can you stop calling me names?
I can say it if I want to.
No, you can't. Nobody can call me that.
Little gentleman, little gentleman, little gentleman. There, smarty.
Dry up, dry up, dry up, dry up.
Little gentleman, little gentleman.
Now, see here, Mitchy Mitch. If you know what's good
don't
for
you. Don't be afraid of him, Mitchy Mitch. You can say anything you want.
Little gentleman.
Cut that out.
He doesn't have to. Say it again, Mitchy Mitch.
He does.
No, what, smarty?
I'll smear tar on his face, that's what.
Oh, no, you won't. You don't dare. Say it, Mitchy Mitch. Go on.
Little gentleman, little gentleman.
I told you, didn't I?
Oh, Penrod, all over Mitchy Mitch's face. You horrid boy.
Penrod grabbed the rock flipping.
Gee whiz.
Oh, all over my new dress. Penrod Schofield.
Hey, oh, Penrod, Marjorie.
Too, Georgie Bassett. But you better not let anybody call me that. I stood enough around here for one day.
Anybody has a right to say little gentleman if they want, haven't they, Sam?
Yeah.
I'm sure you can. Hey, stop it, Penrod. You want to look at George and get that fixed, then? I'll fix you too, Sam. Hey, stop it, Penrod. I guess I can fling tar too.
Oh, me too.
Boy, hey, let me get my hands into that tar.
Hey, you hit me.
Oh, so it's you, George. Yeah,
a stark raving lunatic.
No, Henry.
I sent him to military school. Don't think they'd take him. Do you know why he says all that awfulness happened?
He said everybody had been calling him names.
Names? Little gentleman, that's the vile epithet they called him. And because of it, he wrecks the peace of six homes.
I know.
Why, it's ridiculous. He refuses to explain why he objects to it, but says he'd do the same thing again, and worse, if anybody calls him that, even the President of the United States. How long did you have him locked up?
About 2 hours. But I don't think it softened his spirit.
I know it didn't. I tell you, he's a lunatic. Why on earth should...
It's beyond me.
Why do you keep shushing me?
It's Mr. Knoesling, the new rector of St. Joseph's.
Where?
On the front porch with Margaret. He's so superior to most of her friends, Henry. He talks so intellectually. It's a good thing for Margaret to hear that kind of thing, oh, for a change.
Well, if you want him to come around again, you'd better not let him see Penrod.
Oh, dear. He's staying for dinner. I don't know what I'll do if Penrod doesn't behave.
Would you care for another hot roll, Mr. Knoesley?
No, thank you, Mrs. Schofield, although they're delicious, really. Why, it has been a wonderful day, hasn't it? Warm but balmy. I suppose, little gentleman, you've been indulging in...
Oh, a lovely day. Lovely, just lovely. Penrod.
Beautiful, beautiful, just beautiful.
You'll have another slice of breast of the chicken, Mr. Knoesley?
No, thank you, Mr. Schofield. Ah, to be a boy again. Boyhood is the age of relaxation. One is playful, light, free, unfettered. The young learn quickly, spontaneously. They perceive the obligations of noblesse oblige. They begin to comprehend the necessity of caste and its requirements. They learn what birth means. That is, they learn what it means to be well-born.
Oh, of course, yes.
They learn courtesy in their games, politeness, consideration for others. I make it my pleasure to join them often, for I sympathize with them in all their wholesome joys as well as in their little bothers and perplexities. I understand them, you see, and let me tell you, it is no easy matter to understand the little lads. And what do you say to that, little gentleman?
More? You better have some more chicken. More.
Yes, more chicken. Please do. Please do.
Lovely, 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 just lovely.
You're all very kind, but no, thank you. Yes, I think I may lay claim to understand boys. Youth is golden. We should keep it golden, bright, glistening. Don't you agree, my little girl?
You're sure you won't have more chicken, Mr. Knoesling?
Just a little more.
Oh, dear, no, I'm really stuffed. Let me see. Yes, I was asking the little gentleman...
Oh, suppose we have coffee on the front porch, shall we?
Yes, let's. We'll have coffee in the front.
Excellent idea.
Delightful. That is, I'd be delighted to sit with you on the porch, but, of course, I don't take coffee. I never take stimulants in any form. You first, Mrs. Schofield.
Why, thank you.
Miss Margaret.
Thank you.
And Mr. Schofield.
After you, Mr. Knoesling.
Thank you.
Come along, Penrod. Now, it's somewhat cooler out here. Have a chair.
A lovely, a truly magnificent evening. I shall sit here next to you, Miss Margaret.
Oh, please do.
Care for a cigar?
No cigar, I thank you. I have never tasted tobacco in any form.
Really, Mr. Knoesley?
Never. No cigar, no pipe, no cigarette, no cheroot. For me, a book, a volume of poems, perhaps. Verses, rhymes, lines metrical and cadence. Those are my dissertation. Tennyson, by preference, or Longfellow will rest me in a tired hour. Yes, for me, a book, a volume in the hand, held lightly between the fingers.
Oh, how charming.
You think so? You know, the evening seems touched with a slight coolness. My hat. Perhaps I may request a little gentleman.
You'd better change your mind about a cigar.
Yes, do try one. I'm sure Papa's a nice one.
No, thank you. I was about to
I'll get it for you.
Oh, if you would be so good, little gentleman. It's a black bowler.
I know where it is.
Oh, well.
Such a well-mannered, gentlemanly little gentleman. A tribute to his training, Mrs. Schofield.
Thank you.
Ah, yes, a most gorgeous night. The day is done, and the darkness falls from the wings of night, as a feather is wafted downward from an eagle in his flight.
Oh, how delightful. Do give us all of it, Mr. Knoesling.
Yes, please do.
Well, of course, if you insist. The day is done, and the darkness falls from the wings of night.
Oh.
As a feather is wafted downward from an eagle in his flight. And the night shall be filled with music, and the cares that infest the day shall fold their tents like the Arabs, and as silently steal away.
Oh, charming.
Delightful.
You do read beautifully, Mr. Knoesley.
Oh, thank you so much. I believe I'll take my hat now, little gentleman.
Oh, yes, your hat. I wonder what could be taking Penrod so long. Penrod!
Well, here it is.
Well, for goodness sakes, how did you get out there?
Well, I went to the kitchen for a drink and came around the house.
Thank you, my little gentleman. Ah, that feels much better. My head was really... My word, what a strange...
Do you like Tennyson as much as Longfellow, Mr. Knoesling?
Well, I... That is, each has his own flavor and savor, Miss Margaret. Each has... My word, he seems stuck.
What's that, Mr. Knoesling?
Well, that is nothing. I seem
Is something the matter?
Well,
are you ill?
Not at all, really. I believe... I fear I've taken a trifling cold. I should perhaps be better at home. If you will excuse me. Good night.
Well, of all, what was the matter? He just went, just like that. What on earth did you say to him, Margaret?
Nothing. He just went. And the way he kept tugging at his hat.
Tugging at it? He didn't even remove it when he said good night.
You bet he didn't.
What?
What? Penrod Schofield, what did you say?
Me?
Let me see your hands.
All right.
What's this all about?
Mother! No wonder Mr. Knoesling's hat was stuck. Look! Just look! There's tar all over Penrod's hands again.
The elders of boys should beware of days when the temperature forces inaction and boys in groups are quiet. The more closely that volcanoes, western rivers, nitroglycerin, and boys are pent, the deadlier is their action at the point of outbreak. The things which befell upon this particular afternoon in August began to brew and stew peacefully enough. To escape the heat, the boys had gathered in the empty carriage house of the Schofield stable and were on one of boyhood's favorite subjects.
You know what? When I'm a man, I'm going to hire me a couple of waiters to swing me in a hammock and keep pouring ice water on me all day. Are those watering cans they sprinkle flowers from? How are you for one of them, Herman?
No, you ain't, Sam. You ain't no flower. Ain't nobody going to hire me when I'm a man. I'm going to be my own boss. I'm going to be a railroad man.
A railroad man? Like a superintendent or something and sell tickets?
Me sell tickets? I ain't going to sell no tickets. I'm going to be a porter. My uncle's a porter. Solid gold buttons.
Canals get a lot more buttons than porters.
Maybe so, but porters make the best living.
Well, what are you going to be, Georgie?
I'm going to be a minister.
Minister?
Really?
Sugar, you mean a preacher?
Uh-huh, a preacher.
You know all that preacher talk?
I'm going to learn it.
How loud can you holler?
Well, he can't holler at all. He hollers like a girl.
How good can you climb a pole?
He can't climb either. You ought to see him try it.
Preachers don't have to climb poles.
Good ones do. The best I ever see, he did.
That's crazy.
Sure enough, he did. This preacher climbed a big pole right in the middle of the church that was holding up the roof. He climbed way up and hollered, "Going to heaven, going to heaven, going to heaven now. Hallelujah."
Sure enough, what else?
Sure enough, he did. Then he slid down a little and hollered, "Devil got a hold of my coattails. Devil's trying to drag me down. Sinners, take warning. Devil's got a hold of my coattails. I'm going to hell. Oh, Lord."
Gee whiz. What was he like?
Next, he climbed up a little more and yelled, "Done shuck old devil loose. Going straight to heaven again. Going to heaven. Going to heaven." Then he slid down. Then he climbed up. Last time, he slid all the way down. Just a squalling, a kicking, and a rat. "Going to hell. Going to hell. Old Satan's got my soul."
Sophomore Georgie Bassett couldn't do that to save his life. I'm going to be a preacher. I'd be all right for one, wouldn't I, Herman?
I guess I can do it if anybody can. I'd be better than Penrod, wouldn't I, Herman? I got the strongest voice of anybody here.
You're crazy, I have.
What do you mean, crazy?
Well, who said it first? I did, didn't I, Herman?
That's right, you sure did.
You're too stiff. I am not.
I could do it with my left hand.
Yeah, you could, and you're too sissy.
I could. Just come over to my yard, and I'll show you.
How?
You just come over, that's all. I got a tree in my yard I climb all the time.
All right, let's come on. Well, let's see.
I bet you can.
Come on, let's go over to Georgie's house.
Oh, do come in, Mr. Kenosi. We've been waiting for you.
Thank you, Mrs. Benton. Thank you indeed. Oh, how charming. How delightfully charming.
You know everyone, I believe.
Yes, of course. Everyone.
Please sit down. I'll pour you some iced tea.
Thank you. Ah, this cool room is a relief. A relief and a retreat. The windows open, the blinds close. That's the way it should be. It's a retreat. A fastness, a bastion against the heat's assault. For me, a quiet room and a book. A volume in the hand held lightly between the fingers. A volume of poems, lines metrical in cadence. Something by a sound Victorian. We have no later poets.
Swinburne, Mr. Knowsley? Swinburne?
Not Swinburne. No.
Oh.
I do not observe your manly son, Mrs. Bassett.
Oh, he's out playing in the yard. I think I heard his voice only a moment ago.
I hear wonderful reports of it. Yes, wonderful reports, Mrs. Bassett.
Oh, how nice of you to say it.
Not all boys are of such a lofty spirit, I'm afraid. For instance, you have a neighbor whose household I feel it quite impossible to visit until, well, until the firmer hand is taken. Penrod Schofield is...
But Georgie doesn't play with him. That is, he avoids him as much as he can, without hurting Penrod's feelings.
I shouldn't wonder.
Georgie's very sensitive. I know people who talk about their own children are dreadful bores. But only last Thursday night, Georgie looked up at me so sweetly after his prayers and said, "Mama, I think it would be right for me to go more with Penrod. I think it would make Penrod a better boy." And that very afternoon, mind you, he had come home in a dreadful state. Penrod had thrown tar all over him.
Your son has a forgiving spirit, a too forgiving spirit. Wasn't it Cardinal Newman who said...
I didn't take him a drink. Don't we come over here to get one of his own trees?
Yeah, give him a...
The little lads, they have their game. They grow and they learn.
Yeah, let him go! Go to heaven! Heaven!
My word!
Georgie!
Louder! Devil's got my coattails! Going down! Going to hell!
Georgie! We must see what this is, quickly! Happen to you when you grow up? Do you know what you're going to be?
Well, sure I know. A minister.
For a boy to be 12 is an attainment worth the struggle. Distinction and honor wait upon him. Younger boys show deference to a person of 12. His experience is guaranteed, his judgment therefore mellow, and his influence is profound. Penrod came into his 12th birthday with all the pride and pleasure befitting the occasion. A gay party was planned for the afternoon, so after breakfast, Penrod and his mother drove to the country in order for him to pay his birthday respects to his oldest living relative, his 90-year-old great-aunt, Aunt Sarah Crim. They found her digging with a spade in the garden when they arrived, and now as they enter the house, Aunt Sarah says,
"Well, I'm glad you brought him. Jimmy's baking a cake that I'm going to send over for his birthday party."
"How sweet. Thank you, Aunt Sarah Penrod."
"Well, thank you, Aunt Sarah."
"And I've got something for him right here. Just a minute. Here you are, Penrod."
"Golly, a slingshot."
"Aunt Sarah."
"Oh, don't worry. It isn't for him."
"It ain't?"
"No, it ain't. Goodness. Break all to pieces the first time you tried to shoot it. because he's 35 years old.
35 years old?
Mm-hmm. It was your father's. I want to send it back to him, and I think it's time. Now, you give it to him for me, Penrod, and you tell him that I said I believe I can trust him with it now.
I don't understand, Aunt Sarah.
Well, I took it away from him 35 years ago. One day after he killed my best hen with it, so accidentally, and broke a glass pitcher on the back porch with it. Accidentally, of course. My goodness, you know, you look like him, Penrod. He was anything but a handsome boy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, help yourself to the lemonade and ginger cookies, but of course you will anyway.
Yes, sir.
And here, Penrod, here's a present for you from me.
Gee, what?
A pocket knife?
Yes, it's a pocket knife.
Well, of course, it's a perfectly lovely one, Aunt Sarah, but don't you think...
I suppose you'll do something horrible with it, Penrod. I hear you do that with everything in now, so you might as well do it with this and have more fun out of it. They tell me that you're the worst boy in town.
Oh, Aunt Sarah.
Nonsense.
But on his birthday...
That's the time to say it. Penrod, aren't you the worst boy in town?
Yes, sir.
Certainly. Once you accept a thing about yourself as established and settled, it's all right. Nobody minds. Boys are just like people, really. Well, go on, go ahead. Eat all the cookies you want. You'll be sick before the day's over anyhow, so you might as well get a good start.
Penrod, sit up and stop wriggling. And take your feet off the chair rockers. You'll scratch on Sarah's furniture.
It's all right, Chelsea. You don't expect boys to be civilized, do you?
Well,
you might as well expect eggs to crow. No, you just got to take boys as they are and learn to know them as they are.
Naturally, Aunt Sarah, I know Penrod.
Do you think his father knows him, too?
Of course, men are different. But a mother...
Penrod, your mother's real belief is that you're a novice in the convent.
Ma'am?
Aunt Sarah.
I know she thinks that because whenever you don't behave like a novice, she's disappointed in you. And your father really believes you're a decorous, well-trained young businessman. And whenever you don't live up to that standard, you get on his nerves. And he thinks she needs whipping. Does whipping do you any good?
Ma'am?
And go on, feel yourself up uncomfortably. You're 12 years old and you ought to be happy if you aren't anything else. It's taken over 1,900 years of Christianity and some hundreds of thousands of years of other things to produce you. And there you sit.
Ma'am?
It'll be your turn to struggle and mush things up for the betterment of posterity soon enough. Drink your lemonade.
Nothing, just an old...
Yeah, a slingshot.
Hey, let me look. Be careful, he's 35 years old. He belongs to my papa.
Your papa? Golly. Hey, bet you a 5% marble you can't hit that sparrow. Bet you 2-1.
Bet I can, just you watch. Yeah, you missed!
Johnny, gee whiz, right through your bathroom window.
What the devil, Penrod?
Gee, it's your pop. See you later, Penrod.
Hey, no, wait, Sam.
Penrod, come here.
Yes, sir.
Now, what do you mean, throwing a rock at me through the window? I was shaving. Do you want me to cut my throat?
No, sir. I was shooting at a sparrow, and the sun got my eyes in a sling.
What sling?
Listen.
A slingshot, eh? Where'd you get that devilish thing? Don't you know I've forbidden you 1,000 times?
But, Papa, I didn't...
Don't interrupt. Young man, birthday or not, you're going to get the skinning of your young life. I'll teach you to disobey me.
But, Papa...
Don't you realize those things are dangerous? Don't you know it isn't a toy? Huh. Where the devil did you get it?
I've been trying to tell you, Papa. It's yours.
Well, I'll take it and give it right back to the... Huh?
Aunt Sarah gave it to me this morning and told me to give it back to you.
What?
She said she took it away from you 35 years ago. You killed her hen, she said.
Oh. Yeah. Let me see that thing.
Yes, sir. She told me some more to tell you, but I forgot. I'm sorry, Papa.
it looks like we'll need a new bathroom window, Penrod. Anyway, I never did like the colored glass in this one.
You have been listening to Penrod, an NBC Theater production of the novel by Booth Tarkington. If you wish to increase your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC Theater. For full information, write to NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky, the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas, Washington State College, Pullman, Washington, the University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona, Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas, and Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. Next week, be with us again at the NBC Theater for a dramatization of Henry James' classic novel, The Portrait of a Lady, and the following week for Edith Wharton's The House of Mirth. Penrod was prepared for broadcast by Robert Gray. Johnny McGovern played Penrod, and Jeffrey Silver was Sam. Others in the cast included Gil Bonney, Margie List, Florence Ravenel, Ted Von Eltz, Marion Richmond, Tom Charlesworth, Gigi Pearson, Junius Matthews, Byron Kane, Ann Whitfield, Jerry Farber, and H.B. Barnum. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Our intermission commentator was J. Donald Adams, whose commentary and the transitional music were recorded. The director of today's NBC Theater production was Warren Lewis. How many times during the summer have your newspaper headlines shouted the news of forest fires? Well, enough for you to know that destructive flames have leveled thousands of acres of precious timberlands. And because of the fires, potential homes and paper and furniture were burned away before they'd even left the forest. Because of the fires, valuable watersheds were crippled, depriving communities of their normal supply of pure water. Because of the fires, lives were lost, and sites of natural beauty were turned into jagged black scars. This is the price paid for forest fires in America. This is the price paid for carelessness. For only 10% of forest fires have natural causes. The other 9 out of 10 are started by people. People who work or travel in the woods. People like you. To you and to you alone can be laid the responsibility for forest fires. Your care can prevent them. When traveling in the forest, crush out all cigarette, cigar, and pipe ashes. Break matches in two before throwing them away. Drown all campfires twice before leaving them. And always make sure of the law before using fire in the forest. Last year, 30 million forest acres were burned. This year, another 30 million will be destroyed unless you are careful. Only you can prevent forest fires. When we say the night is filled with music, we mean Monday night on NBC, where you'll find a whole parade of radio's top musical shows. And joining the parade tomorrow night is the 48-piece Band of America to add the lively beat of a military march to your musical treat on Mondays. Remember, Monday's the night for music by the Band of America over most of these NBC stations. This program came to you from Hollywood. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.